Hello, it is June 5th, 2014. This is episode 428 of the Willish Experience podcast on sports on Earth. Today's death, O. Henry, who died June 5th, 1910. A licensed pharmacist at 19, William Porter, who would use the pen name O. Henry years later, worked at a bank in his 30s where he embezzled funds and was fired for it. He was later charged by the... He was there charged by authorities with embezzlement and fled to Honduras. When he returned, because he learned his wife was dying of tuberculosis, he was sentenced to 5 years in jail. While in jail, his writing career took off, and when he was released after 3 years on good behavior, he moved to New York City and wrote 382 short stories in 5 years, including The Gift of the Magi. He was a heavy drinker, and a year after his second wife left him, he died of cirrhosis of the liver. He was 47 years old. The federal courthouse where he was convicted of embezzlement is now known as O. Henry Hall, and President Obama has said he's considering a full pardon of Henry for his crimes more than 100 years later. Here in Athens, though, is merely Thursday. I'm Will Leach. I think you're spending part of your day with me. Last non-soccer show for a while, so if you are depriving yourself of what I think is going to be an incredibly fun month of the World Cup, then you probably don't want to listen to next week's shows because it's all World Cup stuff. But starting tonight, however, it is the NBA Finals. The NBA Finals begin tonight. The Miami, what are they? Hang on. Line. The Miami Heat will be playing the San Antonio Spurs, a rematch of last year's finals. This time the Spurs are favored, which is nice. It's good to spread the Vegas wealth around. We're going to preview that with today's guest, Tom Ziller. He is the NBA writer for SB Nation. Very smart man, been a guest of the podcast before, and one of my favorite NBA writers. So let's pick his brain. All right, first off, Mr. Ziller, thank you for coming on. I know that you, like the rest of America, as I can tell from the piece that you wrote yesterday, you have heat fever.
I do. I have finals fever. I'm really excited about this series. Two great teams, probably the two best teams during the regular season. Whenever they meet in the finals, it seems like a good idea. Seems like a good time. So I'm really excited to get this going.
This, you know, every single time there's ever a finals, and the NBA is really the NBA more than other sports. Maybe the NFL a little bit, definitely not baseball, and I don't think the NHL to a lesser extent. The NBA in the finals, they're very obsessed. This is the time when a lot of people really start talking about legacy. This to me seems like the legacy that ever legacied. This reeks of like every single thing I read about this. Simmons had a long thing yesterday about I think legacy was every fourth word. This reeks of one of those whose legacy is going to be burnished more or burnished less, LeBron or Duncan or so on. I find on one hand, if I'm feeling lazy, that I feel like, all right, cool, this gives me an easy thing to follow, but I'm quite sure it actually tells me anything about the games or who's going to win.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And, you know, frankly, I don't think the guys involved particularly care too much about that. LeBron had a quote today saying that he thinks the legacy talk is stupid. We know that Duncan's never been a guy that's really focused on that stuff. He just kind of, you know, does what he does. And so, yeah, this definitely is like the ultimate legacy series, probably, you know, since one of the Magic Bird series or even, you know, one of the early Jordan ones in terms of, you know, the narrative around it. But in terms of it actually mattering, I don't think it does.
The other general consensus appears to be that, just from watching these tapes, as close as they were last year in the finals, it feels like the Heat are a little worse and the Spurs are a little better. Is that accurate, A, and B, is that something that we'll see clear evidence of?
Yeah, I think it's accurate. You know, the Heat lost Mike Miller in free agency. Wade's older. And they didn't really replace Miller. Battier is much worse than he was last year and is planning on retiring. So they didn't get better in the offseason or over the course of this season. Even LeBron, you know, during the regular season fell off a little bit. He's been just fine in the postseason. But they're just not as powerful as they were last year or the year prior. In terms of the Spurs, they did get a little better. Patty Mills is in the best shape of his life, so they have a really good option off the bench at point guard. Boris Diaw is like playing like a 2004 again. He's been playing great for them. And then Manu's really had a bounce back season that doesn't get talked about enough. He looked dead in the water in the last finals. People were wondering if he was going to retire. But he's back playing, you know, as well as he has in a few years. And I think that's a big factor. So in terms of what the team has done since last year this time, I think the Spurs have gotten better. The Heat have gotten worse.
Do you think the Spurs should be favored? I mean, do you agree with the notion that the Spurs are favored, or is this a series that again, that LeBron himself being so much better than everybody else, is that enough of an advantage to still keep it for the Heat?
Yeah, I think the Spurs are the clear favorite here, not by a particularly small margin, but I think it goes long because of LeBron, because of Wade and Bosh, because those guys are so good individual players, and that's who you really rely on in the postseason and in the finals. I think, you know, LeBron being so great is what keeps the Heat in the series. But I do think the Spurs are better overall.
So, I mean, do you, of all the Spurs teams, if they were to win the title, this would be their fifth? I believe it would be the fifth. Do you think this is the best one?
No. I think you go back to, like, you know, 2005 might be their best one. And people forget about those teams because they're playing those grinding Pistons teams in the finals. It was not the most beautiful basketball that anyone's ever seen when they were battling those guys and kind of fighting through the West. But I think you look at, I mean, Tony Parker in 03 was a rookie. Second or third season. He was a really young guy. He was still pretty raw. That was before all the Jason Kidd trade talk that always surrounded Tony Parker. Manu had just come over from Europe. We'd known him, you know, based on his exploits in Argentina for the national team, but was really just starting to get known over here. And of course, Duncan was in his prime. I think those teams were like really, really solid and could definitely compete, you know, if they were playing today. If, you know, you had a Duncan in his 20s and a young Manu and a young Tony Parker, I think they'd be competitive. I think what's different about this Spurs team is Kawhi Leonard. You have that young, super athletic, super long, emotionless player that just goes out there and, like, kills everything. And I think he could be a difference maker that can make this potentially the best Spurs team ever. But I still go back, and I think about, like, that 05 team is just being, like, on another level.
So what do the Heat have to do? What's the main thing that if they're going to win this series, do they just need, does it come down to playing, to LeBron playing out of his mind? Is there someone else that outside of him and Wade that needs to make a huge step forward? Who's the key for them? I mean, I guess LeBron is always the key, but I mean, is it going to require LeBron playing otherworldly, or is there someone that can step up and make a big difference for them?
Yeah, this is always the funny thing about X factors, because like the X factor in every series is the best player. Like, how good does he play in the series? You know, like LeBron is the X factor in every game he plays. But, I think there's a lot of things that Miami needs to think about in order to beat the Spurs. First of all, they need to make as few mistakes as possible. Mario Chalmers is a decent role playing point guard, but he turns the ball over an incredible amount. And so they really need him and Wade especially to limit those turnovers and not give San Antonio easy buckets. Most trips down the floor are pretty easy for San Antonio. You don't need to make it even easier by giving them opportunities in transition or for the secondary break when they hit one of their guys hanging out beyond the arc. So I think that's going to be a big key. And then how well they defend San Antonio shooters. San Antonio's not shy about taking long-range shots. They get a ton of their offense that way. There's really only three guys that work a ton in the paint, and two of those guys are slashers when you're talking about Manu and Tony, and then, you know, Duncan does some post work as well. Most of their activity is really based on the perimeter, especially for the role players. So Miami needs to get out and challenge those shots, cut off passing lanes, make it difficult for San Antonio to score a lot. You know, the finals last year were really tilted toward the offense, which is a little surprising considering how good a defender LeBron is and how good defensively the Spurs have always been. And when you think of, you know, Duncan and Pop, you really think of defense first. But it was quite an offensive display in the finals last year. I think that's going to continue on whichever team can pull out some defensive stops, can come ahead. I think Miami absolutely has to do a better job defensively to win this year because their offense just isn't as powerful as it was last year.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious, do you think this is indicative of the fact that you're right, the offense was such a larger part of it last year, and it does feel like that this year, particularly San, it feels like if you take the four units, and you would know this better than me, but it seems to me the best thing, like the Spurs offense to me is the best thing in this series. Is this indicative of the move in the offensive direction? Not that the people aren't playing defense, but like that is the, like when I look at the Heat, they just look like a team that they're so reliant on their top guys, and it doesn't feel like offensively wise that's the direction the league is moving in anymore.
Yeah, it's a bit of a give and take. I ran the numbers this morning, and the Heat Big Three account for like 61% of Miami's total points, whereas the Big Three for San Antonio are only like 42%. So San Antonio has long relied on its supplemental role players to provide a lot for the offense. Miami is not as used to that. They're used to, and especially this year, I mean, LeBron just scored a ton. Wade was actually under 20 points a game because he was playing such few minutes. It was really, you know, LeBron was the offense for most of the season. I think that's easier to defend than when you have to defend all five guys on the court, which is what you have to do against San Antonio, unless a guy like Thiago Splitter's in the game. And he can still score a little bit, but he's not someone you have to focus on. Whereas, you know, Danny Green, you have to get out on him. Patrick Mills, you have to pay attention to. And of course, Manu, Tony, and Tim can score a lot. And Kawhi is actually, you know, a surprisingly good offensive player for someone so young and someone who's considered raw coming out of San Diego State. You really have to pay attention to all five guys on the court almost all the time. That's not the case with Miami. You can leave Udonis Haslam if he's on the court. You don't have to focus too much attention on Mario Chalmers or Norris Cole. I mean, they can score, they can set up teammates, but they're not going to do it every night. When a guy like Rashard Lewis is in the game, you want to watch him from beyond the arc, but if he's not floating out there, you don't have to worry about him at all. So I just think, you know, San Antonio is pretty unique in the league, potentially the only team where you really have to pay attention to everyone on the court on offense at all times.
I'm curious though, like it does feel, and again, you know, you're the reason you're on is because you're more of an expert at this than I am. But it does feel like there is something passing, not just about the Heat, but the way that they constructed the team. It feels like depth is more important than it used to be, and spacing. Like it just feels like in a lot of ways, regardless of whatever uncertainty there may or may not be about LeBron staying or leaving in the future, it does feel in a lot of ways that if the Heat are to do this, it feels like they are squeezing one last one out a little bit. This doesn't feel, I mean, obviously, but the fact that they're not favored is a good sign of this. But this just doesn't have that feel of, here comes this juggernaut Heat team. Is anyone going to be able to stop them? It feels like they're the ones that are kind of scraping it together. Is that just because the Spurs are so much better, or are the Heat coming to a logical end here?
I think a lot of that has to do with the Spurs and how awesome they were this year and how well they played Miami in the finals last year. I mean, they were one shot away from winning the title in six against a team that was sort of seen as that juggernaut last year. And they've, you know, been better, and they were clearly the best team in the NBA this year. So I think a lot of it has to do with the Spurs. That said, you know, Miami did build around spacing and shooting, and at least they attempted to, in terms of the role players they brought in. You know, the money that they put out was largely, you know, other than Udonis Haslam, they spent money on guys like Mike Miller, like Shane Battier, of course, Ray Allen. Allen's still hitting those threes. Miller's gone. Battier is done, pretty much. I mean, you can never count him out having like a 6 3-pointer game or something in the series, but looks much worse than he has been in the last couple of years. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily bad bets on those guys, but if they could have found a way to sign Battier to a shorter contract and kept Mike Miller, who still hit like 45% of the threes this year, I think they'd be in better shape. I just think it's sort of a casualty of having very little cap space, considering the load that the Big Three take, and then, you know, perhaps investing in the wrong guy for the future in terms of Battier over Miller. Of course, hindsight's 2020. Mike Miller was not great earlier in his tenure in Miami, whereas Battier was at that point. So if it's evening out at this point, that might be the case. But I think it's just they have tried to make sure that they have plenty of spacing and plenty of shooting on the roster. This year is just a little worse than it has been.
So I'm looking at next year because it's fun to right before the most important thing series that any of these guys are involved in. Let's just talk about what they're going to do in the offseason. It does feel – that's what I ask about the logical endpoint in a lot of ways. Regardless of what LeBron does, it just seems to me that looking at these two rosters, regardless of how this series goes – across the board, it feels like the Spurs, obviously, for as long as they've done this, they've built something sustaining that they can build from. It just doesn't feel like when the big three came together, everyone said, this is going to change sport, and this is the way everything's going to go. But I feel like looking at these two teams now, it feels like the Heat just they were this great because they had LeBron. And LeBron was the guy that they built around. And it feels like the Spurs are the team that have to be the model for everyone going forward, right?
I think the issue is that both models are totally impossible. So the Heat only worked because of LeBron. I mean, they had Wade before, and they had some good players, and they won one title, you know, in the first 7 years that Wade was there, which is really good for the NBA. I mean, teams never win titles unless they're the Lakers or the Celtics or the Spurs, with very few exceptions. So it sort of worked for them, but the model works now because it's LeBron. Any other big three based around a prime free agent just doesn't work. I mean, look at the Knicks. They thought they had their start of a big three with first Amari, and then they brought in Carmelo, and then they had Tyson Chandler, and they were chasing a point guard. No point guard in the league would have turned that team into the Heat, you know. So it's the LeBron model. So have the best player in the league and put really good players around him. Only one team in the league can do that at any given time. And then the Spurs model, I mean, getting a guy like Tim Duncan, you know, back in the 90s, who would go on to have one of the best careers of all time. Everyone knew, you know, coming out of college that he would be great. But to be this great, this deep into his career, I mean, he's getting close to 40, and he almost made an all-NBA team. Yeah. And to have that guy who, you know, is, of course, supremely coachable, as everyone talked about ad nauseum over the years, and then to pluck a guy from late in the first round like Tony Parker, who's going to be a Hall of Fame point guard, and who started his career, you know, basically as a teenager in the NBA, and then to get a guy in the second round like Manu, who's been a multiple-time All-Star and is going to be a Hall of Famer, largely due to his international exploits, and then to have, you know, a front office like Pop and R.C. Buford that just constantly find diamonds in the rough. Their coaching pipeline is actually pretty strong. Their GM pipeline is pretty incredible. So to have all that come together, I mean, it's easy to say, oh yeah, we're following the Spurs model. It's not as easy as just saying it. It's pretty impossible as well. You may have, you know, teams that are able to ape it somewhat. I mean, the Thunder have a really good coachable star and Kevin Durant have been good in the draft otherwise, and do seem to have some decent guys in the front office that will probably go on to be great GMs as well, and have plucked guys out of semi-obscurity, you know, like Serge Ibaka, getting him in the 20s was a big deal. But I mean, it's going to be a lot, you're going to have a lot more failed attempts at aping the Spurs style than successful ones.
So in other words, this makes me feel like there is, you just, the way you described it is almost that you just, it's the same thing we've always kind of said about the NBA. You just really need to get really lucky.
Absolutely. And I think the NBA is perhaps the sport that's most cognizant of its fate as being left to randomness and chaos. I mean, the Heat did create their own luck. They did go out and get LeBron. But in some way, that's luck that they had Wade, who had a good relationship with LeBron, and that they had Pat Riley, who could sort of orchestrate that sort of thing, and that they're based in Miami. I mean, the Timberwolves can't do the Heat model based in Minneapolis, as lovely as that city is. So I think the NBA and everyone working in it really should be cognizant of the incredible amount of luck involved in even creating a contender, let alone a title team.
So last year, going into the finals, I think people still had the idea that, I don't know if I'll put it this way. At the end of the series last year, as close as that series was, and as it looked like the Spurs had it in a lot of ways, would you have thought, okay, I bet we see these two teams again next year? Like, is it which one of them is more surprising to see in the finals, considering where they were at this time in the finals last year?
I can easily say that I did predict that these two teams would be back. This is like the first prediction I've ever gotten right, I think, in the history of my NBA writing. So I did think both
Congratulations.
these teams would be back. Thank you. That was mostly because of Westbrook's injury, though. So when Westbrook came back early in the season, I had a lot more faith in the Thunder. And I think a lot of people probably thought that the Heat would be back, and for two reasons: one, LeBron, and then number two, the Heat. The East is just weak. The Pacers were the biggest challenge to the Heat returning to the finals. For a good part of the season, it looked like the Pacers were the better team in the East. But when you only have to fight off, one rival, and that's really what the Heat have had in the East in the last couple of years is one rival. At any given time, they had the Celtics for a while. They had the Bulls kind of before Rose had his bad injuries, and now they have the Pacers versus the Spurs, who you never know, what team you're going to face and what matchup problems you're going to have. The West is just so deep that I think there's a lot more arguments to be made for other teams, and so that's why I think perhaps that the Heat were are not surprising as a repeat finalist. Of course, they'd also been in the previous two finals before last year. So, whereas the Spurs hadn't been in the finals since 2007, so I think the Spurs are definitely a little more of a surprise. But that's mostly due to circumstances versus team quality.
So flash forward to next year. Do you think this will be? We don't know what's going to happen with LeBron or some of those other stuff. But would you the way these teams are structured and the way that you would predict that this would all come together? Do you think this could very well be the finals again next year or no?
I think it could be. I think I don't think there's any question that. Well, okay, there's question as to what will happen with LeBron. I'm not particularly concerned that LeBron is not going to be with the Heat next year, unless the Heat go out and get blown out in the finals. In which case, I think you kind of throw everything out the window because LeBron doesn't want to be embarrassed. But I think LeBron's going to be back. I think the better question is what's going to happen with Dwayne Wade. How much of a pay cut is he going to take to allow that team to get better? He's the oldest guy of the three. He'll have won four titles in his career if they happen to win this year. Otherwise, he's won more than the other two guys. And so I think, a pay cut's in order for him. I think Bosch has commented that it seems like he wants to stay, and at the very worst, he'll follow LeBron or whatever LeBron does, which is not a bad way to live. And then, so I think Wade's a big question. I don't think he's planning on leaving, but I think if he takes an appropriate pay cut and they're able to bolster that roster, I think you could see the Heat being back easily, especially if none of the sort of second tier East teams do anything huge to step up. The Bulls, everything depends on Rose with him, but they could go after Carmelo Anthony, and that would be really interesting to see how that works out. The Wizards are in a spot where they could actually go out and pick up a free agent or swing a trade and really change things up for themselves as well. I'm not too sure if the Raptors are ready to join that conversation as well. There's a couple other teams that, could do interesting stuff this summer and potentially make a splash. Whereas in the West, I mean, you go back to the Thunder, they've had brutal postseason injuries 2 years in a row. Ibaka did come back in the Western Conference Finals. They did get the benefit of him and for the last four games of that series. But you do wonder if they hadn't spotted San Antonio a two-game lead, would that series be different? Would it have gone to seven? Would Oklahoma City have won? And of course, last year they had the Westbrook injury at exactly the wrong time. So they haven't really gotten a fair shot at the title injury-wise since they were in the finals against LeBron and the Heat a couple years back. So I think you have to consider them a favorite to get back, assuming that, Durant doesn't go down next year. And then there's so many good teams in the West. The West, I mean, everyone understood that the West playoffs was a very big challenge this year just to get in. You had some of the best non-playoff teams of all time played in the West this year. I'm talking about the Timberwolves and the Suns. And then next year it's going to be even tougher because assuming the Timberwolves keep Kevin Love, the Pelicans are trying hard to get into the playoffs, and then they're a short drought. The Kings are like focusing on spending gobs of money so they can get a playoff team before they open their new arena in a couple of years. And then all of the teams that were in the playoffs this year, none of them look like they're going to fall off. The Mavericks are sort of the top option to fall off, but then they've been the team that has pushed San Antonio the furthest, so maybe they'll come back for another run at it. So it's a tough slog in the West. And so in addition to that, Tim Duncan, he's probably not going to retire, but he is a free agent this summer. We'll see if he either picks up his option or comes back for a couple more years. Manu, you know, he had a bounce back season, but he's old enough that you never know when it's going to completely fall apart. I think the one sort of discouraging sign from San Antonio this year was that Thiago Splitter didn't really develop into much more than he was last year. You know, last year I wrote that the next San Antonio big three is coming about, and that's Parker, Kawhi Leonard, and Thiago Splitter. Kawhi's lived up to his end of the bargain. Parker's still awesome, and he's only 31. But I don't think Splitter is quite there. He didn't show a whole lot this year that shows that he's going to get there.
All right. So, final thing here. What when as a fan of the sport and everything, what are you personally most looking forward to in this series? What's the biggest question you have? What is getting you most excited about this series? What you specifically want to see?
I want to see what LeBron does. I think this is the first series period since that 2011 finals that the Heat lost to the Mavericks, in which LeBron is like really under pressure to go way above and beyond. I think last year, the Heat came in as the favorite for that finals. They were the favorite all along. I mean, all through the playoffs last year and this year. And he got tested, and he showed up in games 6 and 7. He was great that entire series, really. But this time, you know, the Spurs are not overwhelming favorites, but widely considered to be the favorites, which is rare for LeBron, especially in Miami. And I don't buy into the legacy stuff. I don't buy into the MJ comparisons, but you have to be silly not to wonder how exactly LeBron is going to play in this type of stage with this type of attention on him, especially, you know, considering he's going for that three-peat, which is sort of a big marker for the game's greatest players. It's a huge accomplishment. It's incredibly difficult when you look at how few teams actually win titles. To win three of them in a row is just crazy. I guess it's the same answer as it would be for any Heat game. You know, what are you looking forward to seeing the most? LeBron, of course, yeah.
All right, and okay. Actually, one last question. I don't know if I'm going to talk to you again. I mean, we'll email before, but I don't know if I'm going to have you on a podcast again. I'm idiotically a Knicks fan. In your personal opinion, what team does Carmelo Anthony play for next year?
It's a tough question. I think he may end up back with the Knicks just for this reason. I think Houston is going to make a big play for him. I think we're already sort of seeing shades of that. I think Chicago wants to make a play for him. I think Chicago in the end is a little cheap, and he's not going to take a pay cut to go caddy for an injured Derrick Rose, I don't think. And so I don't think he goes to Chicago for that reason. Houston has big plans, and they're usually successful. You know, they picked up James Harden, they picked up Dwight Howard, and so they've had a lot of unsuccessful plans too, and I just don't see how they are able to unload Jeremy Lin. I don't know that New York, the franchise, is so much clamoring for Jeremy Lin to come back as bad as Raymond Felton was last year. Jeremy Lin hasn't been exactly great in Houston. He's lost his starting spot for himself, for replaced by Patrick Beverley of all people. And so I don't know that Houston can really get the space to get rid of Lin and or Omer Asik to fit in Carmelo. So I think he might end up back with the Knicks. I think the funny thing is that no one's really talking about the Lakers, which is absurd because it's the Lakers, because they have cap space and because they need a new star. It's funny. I think they will find their way into the conversation at some point just because Jim Buss is kind of crazy, and I could see him making a play for Melo, and I could see Melo, you know, potentially getting a little bit desperate in terms of trying to find a team that's not the Knicks that he can star on. It's crazy how things have changed the last few years with regards to Melo and the Knicks. I mean, this is a team he agitated to get traded to just a couple of years ago, and now it's like you're trying to find a team to kind of poach him away because it seems like he's not going to be back. But I think in the end, the money and then, Phil Jackson's influence might keep him there for a year at least. And then, maybe he starts asking for a trade behind closed doors if the Knicks can't turn around the rest of the roster, which is an absolute tire fire.
So in other words, we're going to have to go through this shit again next year without Carmelo, no matter what happens.
Or the ball could bounce a different way and it could be like last season. If people start hitting their shots and JR is not untying people's shoe all season, maybe we'll just bounce back and forth between a surprisingly good Knicks season and a surprisingly hideous Knicks season.
I'm curious, actually, one last question that I'm curious. When it comes down to the Nets and Knicks, who's actually more screwed in the immediate long term, if that makes sense? The short, medium term. Yeah, the immediate, the next 2-3 years. Who's actually more screwed with all the moves that they've made that have hamstrung them?
I think for next season, the Knicks are more screwed because they have Bargnani and Stoudemire on the cap for one more season. I think if you look, to 2016, 2015, so 1 year from now,
right.
I think the Knicks are in a much better position. They don't have their draft picks, so at least they'll have some cap space, and they'll have some room for Phil Jackson and whichever GM he decides to hire to actually do the work of the front office. I think they'll have some room to maneuver there, depending on what happens, with Carmelo, obviously. The Nets, I think their cap is kind of screwed into like 2019 or something. Right. So, I think if you're looking past this season, the Knicks are in better shape. But that's not to say they're in great shape.
Right.
Better.
Less horrific. All right. Thanks, man. Please enjoy the finals. I'm really looking forward to them, and I'm excited to read what you're doing every day on the hook. So keep up the great work. Thanks for coming on, and enjoy the finals.
Yeah, thanks, Will.
Of course. Be safe, man. All right, thank you to Tom Ziller. You can follow him on Twitter at Team Ziller, TeamZiller. This has been the Will Leach Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Next week, it's all World Cup all week. We've got lots of excellent guests. We kick it off Monday with George Qureshi. He's the editor-in-chief of Howler. He runs the Screamer microblog, I guess is what they're calling them. On Deadspin, that's been launched for the World Cup, and he hosts his own podcast called Dummy, which had Brian Dunseth, former Olympic goal soccer team captain and guy I made fun of in my column earlier this week. Anyway, George is awesome. He's going to preview the whole America and the whole World Cup business because it's World Cup. World Cup starts a week from today, so I'm excited. You should be excited too. The NBA Finals start tonight, and you should probably be excited about that as well. Anyway, have a wonderful weekend, and be safe out there. I will talk to you and George on Monday.